Elizabeth Elliot studied Greek in college with the goal of working as a Bible translator. Shortly after arriving in Ecuador, she married fellow missionary Jim Elliot, who was later killed while trying to reach out to the fierce Alca Indians, also known as the Wadani. Soon after the tragic incident, Elizabeth took her 3-year-old daughter Valerie, and they lived among the same Indian tribe that had killed her husband. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. And that's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking today with my daughter, Valerie Shepherd. Thanks for being with me, Valerie.
Good morning. I am glad to be here. It's a privilege to be able to speak along with Glenda and with my mother. Lars thought that I should say something of our trip to Ecuador. On January 3rd, my husband and I, Walt, and I flew to Quito, Ecuador, where we were met by our son, Walter, who is 18 years old and has been in Peru since September. So we were thrilled and excited to get to see him. We stayed in Quito for one day, and on Friday, first let me say that the Lord planned this trip for us in ways that we could not have imagined. All we knew was that we were going to Ecuador to see the Quechua Indians that we had lived with and to see the Alca Indians that we had lived with. We didn't know who we would get to see. And as my mother had tried to plan the few days with the Indians through correspondence with one of the Indians himself, a man who my father had taught to be a leader of the Quechuas, because there was no telephone, we weren't sure if we'd be able to meet him on the particular day, where we would meet him, what time, or where we would stay when we were with the Quechuas. Well, when we came back from our little tour of Quito on the day before we went down to the jungle, we were coming to our guest house, and there came Steve Saint and Ginny, who live with the Alca Indians. And he said, "How are you getting down to the jungle?" And my mother said, "We thought we would take a bus, which is crowded and uncomfortable." But Steve said, "Well, let me get a car, and we'll all drive down together, because we have to go also." So that was a gift from the Lord that we were able to drive with Steve. He's a wonderful tour guide. As we went down the mountains from Quito into the jungle, he was able to give us all kinds of interesting facts, information about the jungle and about the Indians. Well, the way we met Venancio, the man who had been taught by my father and my mother had corresponded with, was just incredible. He wasn't actually in the town where we had thought we would meet him. He had gone to Quito that morning, but he had had to see the doctor, and we thought, well, we won't get to see him probably till Saturday or Sunday. The Quechua Indians who knew him kept assuring us that he would be back and that there was a place for us to stay. Well, we drive along this gravel road and through the jungle, and we stop at a Quechua house. Looked very much the same as what I had remembered Quechua houses looked. And a little road into the jungle this young man was showing us was where we were going to stay. And so my mother and Lars and Walter went down this little path, and I stayed at the truck with Ginny Saint, and who should come out of this Quechua house but one of my childhood playmates. Her husband and she owned this little tour, it's hard to say tourist, but it was a place made for tourists, little Quechua huts with thatched roof, bamboo walls. They had made this place so that anybody who wanted to come and see what jungle life was like could come and stay there. And so she spoke Spanish also and Quechua, and she spoke Spanish to Ginny Saint. I don't know either language, although I had known Quechua when I was little. I'd forgotten it. So she began to cry when she saw who I was, and she began to express the different things that we had done together. And then as we stood there talking, my mother comes back up the little trail and says, "These cabanas will be great. That's where we're going to stay." And that night we each had a little hut. Well, Walt and I, and Walter had a little hut. Lars and my mother had a little hut. with beds and mattresses and blankets and pillows. And we literally were in the middle of the jungle. What we could see from those little cabanas was the river and the jungle. It was on the edge of a river. Venancio arrived right about dusk with a whole group of Quechuas, and it was a wonderful reunion with him. And he brought us jungle fruit, which is what I remember eating so well. Then he told us that he would meet us the next morning on the bus to go to Shandia. Well, we got on the bus. Usually they're 5 or 10 minutes late. It was absolutely packed with Quechua Indians. We're the only foreigners. And there was no place to sit. But this lady got up, a Quechua Indian lady. She looked at me, she looked at my mother. I could tell there was some shock in her face, and she said to my mother, "Señora," and she pointed to her seat for my mother to sit down, and my mother began to speak to her in Quechua, and she said, "I remember you, I'm one of Valerie's childhood playmates." It was an incredible way that the Lord planned that. She said, speaking Quechua to my mother and my mother interpreting to me, she said, "I have thought of you almost every day since you left." And I was 8 years old when I left. I remembered her face. I remembered her name even. And she said, "Do you remember when we used to play together in the playhouse that your mother had built by the Quechuas? Do you remember the little miniature pots and pans we used to play with?" I didn't know that it would be such an emotional thing for me. But it was a wonder, you know, that the Lord had put her right at the front of the bus and that we could talk through my mother. I was so thankful that my mother still remembered the Quechua language. Anyway, she got off the bus before we got to Shandia, but there was a gift from the Lord. That day that we were on the bus and I met my childhood playmate, Carmela was her name, we got to Shandia and we got to go and see my father's house that is still standing. It has Quechua Indians living in it, and the main thing I will say about that little part of our trip was that it was sad to see the people in Shandia split in the church over who owns my father's house and who owns the land around it. And so it gave me a new burden to pray for the Quechua Indians, maybe 50 or to 100 people still in that settlement. It hasn't changed much since we lived there, and yet the church has fallen apart just because they've argued over who owns what. So if you think of the Quechua Indians in that little area, Shandia, and pray that the Lord will bring reconciliation and maturity to those believers. We went the next day to see Steve Saint, who lives with the Alka Indians, and we spent 2 nights in their home. The Alkas are still fun-loving, laughing, simple people. And when we first got off the plane, we landed in this little airstrip in the middle of the jungle, and a bunch of Alkas were standing there to greet us. They all started talking at once. They all started slapping me on the back, my mother on the back, slapping Walt on the back, Walter on the back, and calling my husband Walt Tementa, who is the boy, little boy that I played with, because they were joking when I was little that I would grow up and marry Tementa. So they were saying, "Here's Walt, here's Tementa." We just stood there and listened and smiled and watched as they just went on and on and on. I can't say Alka words at all, but I can imitate the sound of how they talk, sort of. And so I'm going to give you just a little idea because it's all nasal and they use their hands, so this is how it sounded. It was, again, it was a privilege and a joy to be with them and to be able to share them with my husband and with my son, Walter. The third day that we were there, we were told that we were going to be picked up about 11:30 by an MAF airplane and taken to Chalmetta, and then we would go to Quito from there. At the time that they said we would be picked up, it was pouring rain, and so they couldn't come into the airstrip and pick us up. And so we waited, and we sat around Steve Saint's house. And Alkas are in their house all the time, it seems like, almost all the time. They start coming around 6:15 in the morning, and they sometimes don't leave till 9:30 at night, or whenever Steve and Ginny decide that it's time for them to go back to their houses. And it was incredible to me that Steve and Ginny have given their lives. They made the goal when they went down there that they would go for 1 year, because Steve wants to help the Alcas become independent of the welfare system that has occurred because of the oil companies coming in and taking over the land in Ecuador and taking away the territory of the Alcas, and also the Ecuadorian government trying to appease the Alcas. So Steve has a burden to help the Alcas do things for themselves, have an industry or have work that they can do so that they're not just receiving from the government. And we got a new burden to pray for the Alca Indians. There are Christians there, and there are good, upstanding men, and yet they need even more strength to be people of integrity. Steve shared with us that there was a group of men who went to meet together to decide what to do about the oil companies encroaching upon their territory, and they decided all together that they would not let the oil companies use them or do any more to them. They were going to hold them off, and within 2 weeks, a couple of the guys had forgotten that promise and gone ahead and went to work for the oil companies. So things like that are happening. But for me to experience that, just to see the Alcas, to see that they live pretty much the same as the way they lived when I lived there. They do wear clothing now, so clothing kind of makes things messy because they can't wash their clothing. They wash it in the river, but they can't get it as clean as we get our clothing, and so they all kind of look messy and dirty. They also sell their hammocks that they used to sleep in. So now they have board beds with mosquito nets, and all the board beds had piles of clothing on them. So it just looked like a messier place than when we lived there. But again, it was a privilege. On that day, we sat around and waited for the plane. There was an opening in the weather around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the plane came in. They took us to Chalmetta, where I thought I might be able to see the house where I was born, but we only had 5 minutes in Chalmetta because they said, we have to get into Quito by 10 after 6 or they will not let any more MAF planes in. So we were in Chalmetta for 5 minutes, got back in the plane and took off for Quito and got into the airport in Quito at 6 o'clock. So again, the Lord timed the weather perfectly for us to be able to get out that day, even though we had to wait earlier during the day. And every part of the trip was a gift from the Lord.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Path of Loneliness, Finding Your Way Through the Wilderness to God. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.